I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation, to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. Shalom, and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions in Hickson, Tennessee. Now here's your host, IBJM Ministries Director, John Lawrence.
Greetings, dear friends, and thank you for joining our program today. I'm John Lawrence, the Director of Ministries at IBJM, and I am your host for the program. We want to talk about another Jewish mission field today, and of course there are many Jewish mission fields, great mission fields among Jewish people, right here in American cities. And one of those cities where there is a very huge Jewish population is in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Philadelphia is known as the City of Brotherly Love. It is, of course, an historic city where the birth of our nation actually took place. In Washington Square on Society Hill in the downtown district, many distinct landmarks involved in the founding of our nation are open to the public there. The famous Liberty Bell has its home there, and the Continental Congress met in the buildings in and around that historic square. Philadelphia has one of the largest Jewish populations in the country, well over 300,000, according to recent reports. There are several distinct Jewish communities in and around the city and its suburbs. Let's just take one example, though. The Jewish community of Ronhurst, as it's known, that's in the northeastern section of the city. It was organized as a community in 1997, fairly recently. Its purpose is to promote what the Jewish people call Achdul, which is unity in a new close-knit Jewish community for younger families with children in an area where the housing market is one of the most affordable on the East Coast. A high quality of life has been promoted in an urban setting with a rapidly growing Jewish community there. There are now 450 Jewish families in just this one community, and of course there are other communities close by, and most have children who are sent to Hebrew day schools. There are four Jewish elementary schools there. A previously existing high school has relocated to this community. It was located in a downtown area that has experienced blight, and the Jewish community moved the high school actually out to this new neighborhood. Students from every part of the Jewish neighborhood are within walking distance of the high school. There are several synagogues. The community is made up of industrious professionals as well as business owners, and then also some tradesmen. It's a very prosperous community with many Jewish-owned shops and businesses. The Samuel Tabas House is actually a subsidized apartment building for lower-income, elderly Jewish people. The Jewish community is known for taking care of its own. There is much to commend this Jewish community, humanly speaking, among others in and around Philadelphia. But what there is not there is an authentic gospel witness reaching out to these precious Jewish families with the message of their Messiah. There is a Lubavitch Center there leading many people still further astray. They believe that Rabbi Schneerson is the Messiah, but no one to bring them the Bible truth of the good news of salvation through Jesus Christ. Working through an existing local church, or perhaps even planting a new church near one or more of these Jewish communities, several missionary families could be instrumental in the Lord's service to reach the Jewish population of this historic city. Could the Lord be calling you to be His ambassador to this thriving sector of the city of Philadelphia that is home to an increasing number of young Jewish families? It's an exciting prospect. Wouldn't it be great if God began to put together a team to evangelize this Jewish population? Let's pray together to that end and trust the Lord for an answer. Trust the Lord to call people into His harvest in the Jewish communities of the world. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a great Jewish mission field. Thank you for joining us today, and now let's listen to Jewish believer, our special friend, Mark Oshman, as he brings the Bible study for today.
Welcome back to our radio program. We've looked at Solomon's guidelines for living as he wrote them in the third chapter of Proverbs. He may have addressed these axioms to Rehoboam, his son and successor. In his 11th guideline, Solomon issued his son a double warning. Quote, "Envy thou not the oppressor, and choose none of his ways," unquote. That king realized that godly people often grew vexed about the apparent prosperity of the wicked, in comparison with their own poverty. Solomon wanted his son to stop focusing on the success of those who do evil, and to avoid emulating their evil practices. The Bible taught that, even when evil men flourish, that triumph lasts only temporarily. As Zophar the Naamathite asked Job in the 20th chapter of that book, quote, "Knowest thou not this of old, since man was placed upon earth, that the triumphing of the wicked is short, and the joy of the hypocrite but for a moment?" Unquote. Consider the example of Queen Athaliah of Judah. She killed nearly all of the royal seed of Judah, her own grandchildren no less. She did this in order to occupy the throne of Judah. She did reign as queen, but only for 7 years. A revolt against her authority placed the rightful king, Joash, upon the throne, and resulted in Athaliah losing her life. Evildoers will suffer. In Job chapter 15, Eliphaz the Temanite said, quote, "The wicked man travaileth with pain all his days, and the number of his years is hidden to the oppressor," unquote. Bildad the Shuhite confirmed that assessment in the 18th chapter of Job, when he said, quote, "The light of the wicked shall be put out, and the spark of his fire shall not shine," unquote. In Psalm 73, the author, Asaph, combined both of those thoughts. He envied the ungodly, who seemed to prosper in spite of their wickedness. Asaph noted that, quote, "They are not in trouble as other men, neither are they plagued like other men," unquote. He bemoaned his own decision to keep his heart and hands clean. However, his attitude changed after he went into God's sanctuary. Then Asaph remarked, quote, "Surely thou didst set them in slippery places. Thou castest them down into destruction," unquote. He went on to exclaim, quote, "How are they brought into desolation? As in a moment, they are utterly consumed with terrors. As a dream when one awaketh, so, O Lord, when thou awakest, thou shalt despise their image," unquote. Asaph concluded the 73rd Psalm with this affirmation, quote, "It is good for me to draw near to God. I have put my trust in the Lord God, that I may declare all thy works," unquote. Instead of continuing to gnash his teeth over the outward success of evildoers, Asaph instead recommitted his life to God. God despises those who continually practice evil. As David said in the 7th Psalm, quote, "God is angry with the wicked every day," unquote. Some Bible students might take issue with the portrayal of God as a deity who passes judgment upon those who sin. Such people might assert that this argument goes against the Bible's depiction of God as a loving deity. These people confuse the two concepts of love and license. God's love for the human race does not mean that he will overlook, much less condone, wickedness. In Exodus chapter 34, God revealed himself to Moses as a deity, quote, "that will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and upon the children's children, unto the third and to the fourth generation," unquote. In Ezekiel chapter 18, he told that prophet that anyone who sinned would die. A loving God cannot and will not allow his creation to get away with their transgressions. A holy God must punish those who sin. In Psalm 11, David wrote, quote, "Upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire, and brimstone, and an horrible tempest. This shall be the portion of their cup," unquote. This passage described how God, in fact, actually dealt with Sodom and Gomorrah, as recorded in Genesis chapter 19. He literally rained fire and brimstone upon those cities and destroyed them. A believer has no reason to envy the wicked. After a short period of seeming prosperity, evildoers will suffer the wrath of God. As Paul wrote in Romans chapter 2, quote, "We are sure that the judgment of God is according to truth against them which commit such things, unquote. Solomon contrasted God's treatment of the wicked with the way he dealt with the righteous. In Proverbs chapter 3, Solomon declared that, quote, the froward is abomination to the Lord, but his secret is with the righteous, unquote. The king also noted that, quote, the curse of the Lord is in the house of the wicked, but he blesses the habitation of the just, unquote. The first psalm described how God differentiated between those who obeyed him and those who did not do so. In that chapter, David compared the blessedness of the upright with the miseries of the ungodly. God will empower the righteous to flourish. David compared the upright man to, quote, a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruits in his season, unquote. Whatever that individual would undertake in accordance with the will of God, that endeavor will prosper. Yet David continued, the ungodly, quote, are like the chaff which the wind driveth away, unquote. In other words, the unrighteous have no value or worth with respect to God. David also noted that, quote, the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous, unquote. In the 25th chapter of Matthew, Jesus Christ depicted a similar scene in his account of the judgment of the nations. Quote, when the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory. And before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Unquote. In Proverbs chapter 3, Solomon also noted that God dealt differently with those who scorned him than he did with those who submitted to him. Quote, surely he scorneth the scorners, but he giveth grace unto the lowly. Unquote. The Hebrew verb lutz, translated here as scorner. The Hebrew verb lutz denoted mockery, a type of a mockery that had its source in arrogance. In other words, Solomon here defined the scorner as anyone who impudently ridiculed the truth. Throughout the book of Proverbs, Solomon counseled his son about how to handle scorners. In Proverbs chapter 9, he wrote, quote, he that reproveth the scorner getteth to himself shame, unquote. He advised the son, quote, reprove not a scorner, lest he hate thee. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love thee, unquote. In the 15th chapter of Proverbs, Solomon explained why reproving a scorner would prove futile. Quote, a scorner loveth not one that reproveth him, unquote. God punishes scorners. According to Proverbs 19, quote, judgments are prepared for scorners, unquote. The second chapter of 2 Kings contained an example of how God punished scorners. As Elisha the prophet traveled to the city of Bethel, a group of what are termed little children ridiculed him. They said, quote, go up, thou bald head, go up, thou bald head, unquote. Since Elisha's predecessor, Elijah, had recently ascended into heaven by means of a fiery chariot, the remarks of those youths could have derisively referred to that event. If that were the case, then they mocked God, as well as mocking Elijah. God handled the situation by sending two she-bears to them, and those animals mauled 42 of those young scorners. They paid a terrible price for their mockery. When Jesus Christ condemned the Pharisees and scribes in Matthew chapter 23, he noted that, quote, whosoever shall exalt himself shall be abased, and he that shall humble himself shall be exalted, unquote. Years later, James and Peter offered similar observations in James chapter 4, 1 Peter chapter 5, respectively. Both men wrote, quote, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace to the humble, unquote. James followed up by advising his readers, quote, humble yourselves in the sight of God, and he shall lift you up. Thank you for tuning in to these broadcasts. We invite you to return for future programs about Proverbs chapter 3 and Solomon's Guidelines for Living.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.